Oh, yes. This is S4E6 Robert Culp Part 2. Welcome to Fanacek. That music before the intro was the Henry Mancini mystery movie theme. Love that. It used to come on Sunday nights, you know, before some of the mystery movies will come on, the favorite of which of mine is Columbo. And we will be talking about several Columbo episodes today because, let's face it, Robert Culp is a legendary Columbo guest. But let's catch up. So previously on Fanacek, we talked about Robert Culp, where he's from, where he started, and we ended in 1968 with the wrapping up of his hit show, I Spy. So before we pick up in 1968, I thought we'd just kind of do a quick mention of some of his personal life stuff. You know, so he was married 5 times. Yikes. Once or twice is more than enough, but he was married 5 times. He was married to Elaine Carroll for 5 years, from 51 to 56. Then he married Nancy Ashe. They were married from 57 to 66. He married a French actress named France Nguyen, probably pronouncing that wrong. He met her when she guest starred on I Spy. Then he married Sheila Sullivan from 71 to 76 and Candace Faulkner from 1981 on to the end of his life. So in addition to appearing, though, in 4 episodes of I Spy, 2 of them written by Culp in 1969, Nguyen, the French wife, also co-hosted the second episode of the TV comedy Turn On with him. So she starred in I Spy with him. Then she did Turn On with him. We're going to be talking about Turn On today. But that episode was actually never shown, the one she appeared on with him. He had 3 sons and a daughter with his second wife, and then he had a daughter with his 5th wife. That's a lot of kids, too. His son, Joseph Culp, is an actor and director. His son, Jason Culp, is a voiceover actor who has narrated tons of audiobooks. His grandson, Elmo Kennedy O'Connor, is a rapper and performs under the alias Bones. And I have to look that up now. Hold on. Let's pause this podcast. Let me look up Bones. Ooh, he's got a Wikipedia page here. So O'Connor, again, this is Robert Culp's grandson, is known for his pioneering work in subgenres of hip-hop referred to as emo rap and trap metal. Since 2010, O'Connor has released an extensive discography and developed a large fan base. As of 2019, he has released over 80 albums, mixtapes, and EPs across several aliases. Okay, now we got to find some music. I got to find it. So definitely looks emo-ish. Let me take a look here. Hold on. Okay, so I've pulled him up on Apple or iTunes, rather. I don't know what any of his songs are. So this is his first top song called HDMI. Let's listen to it together. Robert Culp's grandson, WNBC. Does he start rapping at some point? Where's the rap? This is why you listen to these first before playing them on your podcast. Let's see. Sesh, spoken like a motherfucker, hollered at a motherfucker, bitch, please stop the play. Sesh, all the water boys dead to the mother boys, we can't hear a word you say. We don't know your name, motherfucker, yeah. Anyway, that is Robert Culp's grandson. So there you go. That was a little impromptu podcasting. So that's a little bit about his personal life. And if you want to listen to his grandson, it's Bones, the emo rapper. So let's get back to the credits. So we ended with I Spy, which ended in 1968. So now Robert Culp is a known man. He's a player. He's been in most of America's living rooms for 3 years on I Spy. So again, it's 1968, I Spy ends, but Robert Culp is just getting started. He appears in a 1968 episode of Ronan Martin's Laugh-In. So let's talk about that. I mentioned George Schlatter. I think I mentioned it in a previous podcast, but he's 94 years old. He created Laugh-In. He wrote a book called Still Laughing. His publicist reached out to me. I got to interview him. It was amazing. 40 minutes. It went great. He kept complimenting me on the research that I had done. And then I lost the fucking episode. I was trying to edit it. There was this cool thing his secretary did when she answered the phone. I wanted to turn that into the intro. So I started cutting things and I just lost the episode. Told the publicist. The publicist never got back to me. So that's fair. I fucking earned that, right? Or I earned to not get called back. But anyway, so Robert Culp appeared on Ronan Martin's Laugh-In, which is probably one of the most influential sketch comedy shows out there. Definitely a precursor to SNL. So that takes us to 1969. Robert Culp is already a TV star, and now he's about to become a movie star as well, because 1969 gives us Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice. Oh, man, this movie is a fucking beast. Robert Culp and Natalie Wood is a married couple. Elliot Gould and Diane Cannon. We've talked about Natalie Wood a lot on the podcast. You know, she may or may not have been killed by her husband. No one's quite sure. Of course, Elliot Gould was at one point the biggest star in Hollywood, but then was such an asshole that kind of killed his career. Diane Cannon, a great beauty, of course. So let me read you a synopsis. Let me pull up my IMDb here. I lost it because I was looking up Bones. Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice. Trendy West Coasters Bob and Carol try wife swapping with Square Ted and Alice. So I think I mentioned in part one of the Robert Culp episode that he had a reputation for being a swinger. I really didn't find anything to substantiate that. I'm guessing that that reputation came from this movie. But the movie itself was written and directed by Paul Mazursky, really well-known actor and director. He was in tons of film and TV as an actor. As a director, he directed Harry and Tonto, great movie with Art Carney, Moscow on the Hudson with Robin Williams, Down and Out Beverly Hills, Scenes from a Mall, one of the few Woody Allen movies I actually enjoy. It's Woody Allen and Bette Midler. The entire movie takes place in a mall. I think it's actually the Mall of America, that big-ass one, which that's in Minnesota, I think. Anyway, back to Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice. I mentioned that I would read a review to give you folks a feel for what this was like. So here we go. The title of this is Insight, Insight. I love this movie. Although some people may classify it as dated, the concepts that it deals with are worth exploring today. How honest are we to one another? How often do we actually look at people? And what is love? From its opening shots, tooling up the PCH in a cool car, to its closing ones, people really looking at each other, it's a true work of art. The beginning truly captures the free and concept-expanding atmosphere that is the Esalen Institute, which itself has not changed much since then. Screen goddess Natalie Wood, who I love Natalie Wood, in one of her best roles, inhabits the honesty and sexual freedom that is Carol. Robert Culp is a strong counterpoint to her as Bob. The more repressed couple, Elliot Gould and Diane Cannon, are perfect. Along the way, they explore the boundaries of sexuality, monogamy, and friendship, and realize that some lines are better left uncrossed. That's fucking true. To me, it puts a very fine point on what was going on in the 60s and where exactly we went wrong. I also made a note to read some trivia because there's some very interesting IMDb trivia about this one. So let's take a look here. Which one? Okay. Natalie Wood's first movie in 3 years. Now, by the way, but before I go further, I've always liked Natalie Wood. She's one of the few actresses who was a child actor, teen actor, adult actress, and she crushed it at every level. Anyway, so I've talked a lot about her, but I've got this weird personal connection that my younger daughter looks sometimes shockingly like Natalie Wood. There are pictures of Natalie Wood as a child compared to my daughter as a child. And it's like, holy shit. Like, it's scary. We've had old people stop her sometimes in the street and say, oh my gosh. So anyway, so I've always had this weird fascination with Natalie Wood. So here's some trivia. Natalie Wood's first movie in 3 years. It could have been her comeback, but she did not capitalize on its success at all. Shot in the fall of 68, this would be Wood's last acting job for almost 5 years, until the summer of 73 when she worked on a made-for-television film called The Affair. She didn't make another feature until Peeper, a gap of 6 years. Wood more or less retired after Penelope in 1966 when she was just 28. Yeah, she kind of ended early. Here's some other interesting trivia. Bill Cosby, I guess, makes a cameo in this, wearing a hat, red shirt, and sunglasses. He bumps into Bob in the nightclub scene while Bob and the others head for their table. He and Robert Culp, of course, shared this screen for years in I Spy. And you know what? Hint, hint. Bill Cosby's coming back up in this episode a little bit later. So this Culp's role in this movie, interestingly, was turned down by Warren Beatty. It was turned down by Steve McQueen, and it was turned down by Robert Redford. How about that shit? I mean, you never want to be like the fourth actor they call, and I'm guessing he wasn't. There's probably more people. But hey, man, you know, being considered for the same role as Warren Beatty, Steve McQueen, and Robert Redford, that says something. This is also Leif Garrett's first film appearance. Leif Garrett, the 70s teen idol who is still alive, shockingly, looks like shit. But guess what? Leif Garrett, like Bill Cosby, is going to come up again in this episode. So it became a TV show in 73, but alas, it failed. Not sure why I didn't cover it in season two of Fanacek, but I did see it in the research, but chose not to feature it in an episode. But it did become a short-lived TV show. The movie was nominated for 4 Oscars. Best Supporting Actor for Elliot Gould, Best Supporting Actress for Diane Cannon, Best Original Screenplay for Paul Mazursky, and of course, Best Cinematography. So 4 Oscar nominations. So it was big, and now so is Robert Culp. Right now, he's also a movie star. So let's see what he does going forward. Well, interesting story. That same year, 1969, he does an episode of Turn On. And I know a little bit about this show because, as I mentioned, I spent 40 minutes with George Slaughter. So Turn On was a TV show. George Slaughter, he created Ronan Martin's Laugh-In. It's a big monster hit. At one point, they had a 50 share. Can you believe that? That means 50% of the television viewing audiences on that night were watching that show. A 50 share. Holy fucking shit. That's insane, a 50 share. So while doing that, he created Turn On. I'll read a synopsis here. A multimedia presentation satirizing sex, politics, and everything else splattered across the screen at blinding speed. One producer called it a visual comedic sensory assault involving animation, videotape, stop-action film, electronic distortion, and computer. So it was kind of ahead of its time. I've made a note to read the first 2 trivias. I got to speak to George Slaughter about this. You'll never know because I fucking deleted it by accident. What am I looking for? The first 2 trivias? Well, let's read them. Kind of interesting stuff here. So the pilot aired February 5th, 1969. 2 stations refused to air the rest of the program after the first commercial break, which was 10 minutes into the show. A few stations on the West Coast refused to air it at all. Though it wasn't officially canceled for several days, it became the shortest running U.S. TV series ever. Like some fucking guy in Cleveland, I think. Yeah, here we go. The station manager of WEWS, Cleveland's ABC affiliate, whose series creator George Slaughter referred to as a wacko in a 2010 interview. He said the same thing to me when I spoke to him. This guy in Cleveland pulled the show off the air after 15 minutes. The affiliate notified ABC that the good people of Cleveland would no longer receive Turn On with a telegram, "If your naughty little boys have to write dirty words on the walls, please don't use our walls." And anyway, so the show got canceled by some asshole in Cleveland, basically. So it could have been the next, you know, Laughing, no one knows. But Turn On became the shortest-lived show of all time. Culp was in the second episode, which was 2 of 2. He appeared, though, with Teresa Graves. So now I got to talk about Teresa Graves. So Teresa Graves was a famous singer, dancer, actress. She was the lead in a show called Get Christy Love, which if you go back and watch Reservoir Dogs, they reference that show, Get Christy Love. You're under arrest, sugar. They talk about that show, which is kind of funny. But I've got a weird personal connection to Christy Love, or excuse me, to Teresa Graves as well. As I mentioned before, my wife's grandfather was one of the producers of the Ed Sullivan Show. So I was recently given a box of a lot of his belongings and memorabilia and stuff. So I was going through a lot of it. And I found this photo of like about 10 or 11 people clearly dancing on the Ed Sullivan Show, like performing on the Ed Sullivan Show, and each of them had autographed it. And I didn't know who it was. So I actually turned to the good people of Facebook, who can be helpful sometimes because I've got a lot of Facebook friends. I'm in a lot of Facebook groups. Everyone knows a real fan of Check on Facebook. So I went to them. I was like, "Hey guys, Tom, help me out here. Who is this picture of?" So of course, like a million people knew it was the Doodletown Pipers. Now the Doodletown Pipers had a big, big hit song that's been in tons of movies. Actually, I'm going to pull up. Let me find the Doodletown Pipers as we speak. Hold on. I'm going to pause here. Here, let me play this song. This song's been in like a ton of things. Yeah, nailed it. Anyway, that song is very popular. It's been in a ton of things. One thing I can pull out of my butt without research, it was featured in Born on the 4th of July, when after the war, when Ron Kovic goes to visit his buddy who did not go into the war, but ended up opening a big burger joint. And so he's going to give, you know, Tom Cruise, Ron Kovic, a job there. Anyway, that's the song that was playing like during a parade scene or something. But anyway, I realized, oh, it's the Doodletown Pipers. I researched them. And it turns out that one of those autographs, there's one African-American person in the photo and it's Teresa Graves. So I actually have an autographed photo of Teresa Graves. That was a long, convoluted story. But if you listen to this podcast, I tell a lot of long, convoluted stories. So there you go. What the hell were we talking about? So that was Turn On, which Robert Culp appeared in the second episode. Okay, so we're like 15 minutes into this podcast now, and I'm still in 1969 and only discussed two projects, so I got to pick up the tempo here, but I'm good at that. So now we're 1970, and he starts with a few TV credits. In 1971, he does two films, one of which is worth mentioning. It's Haney Calder, a Western gunfighting movie starring Raquel Welch. Now we're going to go off on another tangent, so we're not going to get far after this project here, because here's the thing. Let me pull up my IMDb. Raquel Welch, I guess I'll start with this movie first, right? It's called Haney Calder. Let's talk about the poster. It's Raquel Welch, and it's a sexy, cool Raquel Welch movie poster. She is the queen of movie posters. I'd say Yul Brynner is probably the king. Maybe Telly Savalas is kind of high up there too, but Yul Brynner probably has the coolest movie posters of any male actor. Female actor, it's got to be Raquel Welch, because she was so fucking beautiful. They really made her sexy in these things. I'm just going to pull up Raquel Welch real fast. Like, no research here. And just going to pull up her posters. The Three Musketeers. That's not a great one. Let me see here. What else? What's a good poster? Here we go. Myra Breckinridge. Look at this poster. Oh, you got to do yourself a favor. Gore Verdell's Myra Breckinridge. Look up that poster. It's Raquel Welch in a basically a red, white, and blue American flag bikini. And look, she looks amazing. She's one of those beautiful. Haney Calder. Fathom. She's sexy. What else? A bunch of them. Anyway, I've always noticed that she's like the MVP of females on posters. So anyway, so let's get back to this damn movie, Haney Calder. And I got to find it. Okay, I'll read you the synopsis. After she is raped and her husband murdered, a woman hires a bounty hunter to instruct her in the use of a gun so she can get her revenge on the three outlaws responsible. Looks like a cool movie. And again, I mean, just... Raquel Welch has to be top 20 of all time. I'm talking about in the history of human beings. Like, I'm including cave people, Neanderthal, everything. She's got to be top 20 at least of all time. She's so fucking beautiful. And they just make her look so beautiful on posters. Anyway, moving on. 1972, Robert Culp, he reteams with Bill Cosby. I told you he'd come back. They did a movie together called Hickey and Boggs. Let's take a look at Hickey and Boggs here. Where you can fly, ba-bum, bum, 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 up. Up and away. Bill Cosby and Robert Culp from I Spy are united again as private eyes in this Walter Hill scripted film noir. Searching for a missing girl, they find themselves involved with vicious criminals and precipitating a string of deaths. Dun dun dun. So, okay, first, cool poster. It's a really cool poster. Bill Cosby. It's a shame, too, because this is the kind of thing I would add to my collection, but you can't have Bill Cosby stuff anymore. He, like Michael Jackson, sadly, are canceled. You cannot have them in there. He's a rapist, most likely. Anyway, but it is a cool poster. Second thing I want to talk about, it was written, as I mentioned in the synopsis, by the legend Walter Hill. He directed The Warriors, 48 Hours, Streets of Fire. I've talked about Streets of Fire ad nauseum on this podcast. My folks, when we first got a VCR, they wisely got a Beta. Good choice, dumbasses. And the first thing they ever rented, I'll never forget, was Streets of Fire, a movie that no fucking six-year-old kid would ever have any interest in watching. So thanks again, guys. But anyway, so whenever I see Streets of Fire, I think of that. But Walter Hill also directed Brewster's Millions. He wrote The Getaway with Steve McQueen and Alan McGraw. That was the movie where they met. She was married to Robert Evans. She went off to film The Getaway with Steve McQueen. They fell in love. Steve McQueen stole her away from Robert Evans, who at the time was like the biggest producer in Hollywood. By the way, that movie was directed by Sam Peckinpah. But you know, Walter Hill also wrote a lot of these projects. He wrote The Warriors. He wrote 48 Hours. He wrote Streets of Fire. So anyway, legendary stuff. And then the third thing about this movie, Hickey and Boggs, it was directed by Robert Culp. How about that? So Robert Culp now working with Bill Cosby and directing the film. The film also featured Isabel Sanford. She was Wheezy in The Jeffersons. So was, let's see here, Robert Mandan. He was a character actor. He's not that guy. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was in Soap. I always know him as Soap. I think he was also in the Three's Company and then the spinoff or the sequel series, Three's a Crowd. He played John Ritter, Jack Tripper's father-in-law or future father-in-law. But Robert Mandan, he's a famous character actor. Other people that were in this movie, Vincent Gardenia, Ed Lauder, another that guy. Joey Tata, T-A-T-A. He was Nat from 90210. He owned the Peach Pit. Also worked at the Peach Pit. A lot of Peach Pit shit happened with that guy. He's dead. He died recently. James Woods was in this movie too. So there you go. I'm going to go ahead and read a review. I wonder what people thought of Hickey and Boggs, like Bill Cosby and Robert Culp getting back together. Let's take a look here. Let me find a review. Here we go. This person gives it 8 out of 10. Culp direct self, Cosby, in brutally effective early 70s noir update. Okay. Action and suspense films from the early 1970s have a distinctive period flavor to them. The surprisingly effective Hickey and Boggs co-star Robert Culp's sole directorial effort embodies that... The surprisingly effective Hickey and Boggs co-star Robert Culp's sole directorial effort embodies that disillusioned and dissolute era of movie making. All right, I know what this guy's talking about. The rough and choppy editing, the oddly cropped shots keep the viewer on edge. So do the less than pristine cinematography and the horrible soundtrack, with dialogue overlaid on a constant dull background roar of ambient noise. Often this proved to be a recipe for pretentious but empty disasters and cynical exploitation films. Here, it all works to keep the level of unease of menace uncomfortably high. I'm putting this on my list. I want to watch this movie. So this person liked it. Wow, I still have like 85 credits to get through. That's why there's going to be a part 3 to Robert Culp, by the way, because I couldn't get through all this stuff. Let's see here. So I would move on, but I missed something that really starts in 1971. So now I got to backtrack. It's epic. It's monumental. And it's really the reason I initially fell in love with Robert Culp. Maybe love's a strong word. Fell in lust with Robert Culp. That's really even a stronger word. But here's the thing. 1971. He does his first of 4 Columbo episodes. Columbo, y'all. Columbo. I've said it a million times. That's my favorite show. So let's discuss them each. So the first Robert Culp episode is titled Death Lends a Hand. It aired October 6, 1971. I'm going to pull it up here on the IMDb. It was the first appearance, by the way, of Columbo's car, the 1959 Peugeot that he drove. It appeared first in this episode. But here's a synopsis, too. Death Lends a Hand, in which Robert Culp played the killer. Columbo matches his skills against Brimmer, a former cop turned private investigator with a quick temper who tries to blackmail a client's wife. When she refuses, he accidentally kills her, and it's up to Columbo to nail him. Bum, bum, bum. You know what? Spoiler alert, Columbo caught his ass. There you go. Now, the second one was The Most Crucial Game. It aired November 5th, 1972. I'm going to give you a synopsis on that one, too. The manager of a football team murders its callow owner, making it look as if the young man had an accident in his swimming pool. Lieutenant Columbo is on the case. This was a good one. It also featured Valerie Harper, like playing a foreign woman, like a brief cameo. But it is Valerie. I had to rewind and everything. I was like, is that Valerie Harper? Sure is. Dean Stockwell was in this one, too. Dean Stockwell, I know him from Quantum Leap. He was the little guy in Quantum Leap. It also featured Richard Stahl. He's a that guy character actor. Richard Stahl has been in a ton of stuff. So that is The Most Crucial Game. I remember this is one where he's like pretending to be an ice cream man or something. It's like he leaves the stadium. He gets in an ice cream truck, drives around. I remember that being part of it. I don't know. And I've got this poster of all the Columbo killers, and there's one I can always see from a distance. It's clearly an ice cream man. And I'm always like, oh, that's Robert Culp. The third one he did in the 70s, because the fourth one comes way, way later, which we'll talk about in part 3. But the third one he does is probably the best one. It's called Double Exposure. And I actually just recently rewatched this one. It aired December 16th, 1973. Here is the synopsis. A self-styled motivation research specialist uses subliminal cues to commit a murder. Lieutenant Columbo is on the case. So he's always on the case. Culp, this one always stood out to me because he has really cool outfits in this one. He's like really hip, like a yellow leather jacket. And he's basically this guy who's like a famous doctor, written a bunch of books. He like owns the building in which all his research is done. And he studies subliminal messages and all that kind of shit. Anyway, and then Columbo outwits him by also doing subliminal stuff in a film reel. It also featured Danny Goldman. I've talked about Danny Goldman before. Later, after being an actor, he became a very big-time commercial casting director. And I read for him several times when I was an actor. And I'm just going to put it out there. He was gay, openly gay. And he was known as... I don't know if he had a casting couch per se, but he was pretty open about when he'd be interested in someone. And he did, in fact, kind of hit on me. Commenting on my shirt. Where'd you get this shirt? It's so cool. And what's funny about it was a government issued shirt. It was from when I was in the Navy. But anyway, that's my Danny Goldman story. There you go. He's dead now. So I'm not, you know, I'm kind of fine you know, talking ill of the dead. It's one of my things that makes me me. But that happened. Richard Stahl, again, was in this. He's that character actor I mentioned. Chuck McCann was in this. I always like Chuck McCann. This episode, though, Double Exposure, was written by Stephen J. Cannell. I did a whole episode about Stephen J. Cannell back in season 3. He created tons of shows, including one we're going to talk about in Robert Culp Part 3. Dun, dun, dun. Anyway, tons of stuff. Okay, now I know I said he did 4 episodes, but the fourth one, though, was in 1990s. Columbo Goes to College, but we'll get to that in part 3. So now, don't be fooled. He's doing Columbo, but he was staying very busy between these Columbo appearances. No rest for this guy, right? So from 71 to 73, whilst doing Columbo, he also did a couple of TV movies, A Cold Night's Death, which is a great title. He did one called The Lie. In 73, he did A Name for Evil, a horror film, also with a great title, A Name for Evil. He did a TV movie called Outrage, which also featured Nicholas Hammond. Nicholas Hammond famously played Spider-Man in the live-action TV show in the 70s. Horrible special effects, but it is worth watching. Like, if do yourself a favor, go on YouTube, and if nothing else, watch the opening title sequence, the Superman TV show from the 70s. It is pretty funny to watch. Like, it's like he's like jump, like it's just really bad effects and everything. But that was Nicholas Hammond. Later on, he would have a great scene, well, a couple of great scenes in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He played the director, Sam Wanamaker, who directs Rick Dalton in the Lancer pilot. And I did a whole episode about Sam Wanamaker in season 1 of Fanachek. So there you go. But perhaps Culp's greatest accomplishment of 1973 was an episode of Shaft. That's right, Shaft. I've mentioned this before. The famous exploitation movie became a short-lived TV show. Not sure why I didn't feature it on season 2 of Fanachek. I just chose not to. But anyway, Robert Culp did an episode of Shaft. Okay, so in 1974 now, my man Robert does a TV movie called Houston, We've Got a Problem. So there's a lot to talk about here. So obviously I'm going to read the synopsis in a bit, but the movie's about Apollo 13, right? But first let's talk about the actual quote, because it's funny, because this was called Houston, We've Got a Problem, which I was like, well, that doesn't sound right. I thought it was Houston, We Have a Problem. It's not. So everyone's fucking this up. Here's the real quote. The original quote was, Houston, we've had a problem. That's what I think it was. It wasn't even a fucking, who the hell did Tom Hanks play? Now I got to look this shit up. I'm so embarrassed. Let's take a look here. I'm going to live without pausing, pull up Apollo 13. Jim Lovell? Was it Jim Lovell? Yeah, okay, it was. So Jim Lovell, in the movie Apollo 13 with Tom Hanks, it's Jim Lovell played by Hanks that says, Houston, we have a problem. It's actually not true. It was, I think it was Mattingly who said it, which was played by Kevin Bacon. But anyway, the quote was this, Houston, we've had a problem. They didn't hear him. They asked him to repeat it. And I think that's when he said, Houston, we have a problem. Something like that. So this movie is Houston, we've got a problem. The Tom Hanks movie is Houston, we have a problem. The actual quote was Houston, we've had a problem. So anyway, that was a lot of people screwed this up. And I went on too long about this. So anywho, let's go with the synopsis of Houston, we've got a problem. NASA must devise a strategy to return Apollo 13 to Earth safely after the spacecraft undergoes massive internal damage, putting the lives of the 3 astronauts on board in jeopardy. How about that shit? So my man Robert Culp was one of the stars of this. I think this was kind of a big hit thing. This story has been told so many times. Who else was in this thing? Let's take a look here. Clue Gulager was in it. Sandra Dee was in it. Eli Wallach, one of my favorites. He was the narrator. So that's Houston, We've Got a Problem. And now we're going to go on a run of mostly forgotten 70s movies. So that happens to everybody. At least he stayed busy. At least he did a lot of work. 1974, he did The Castaway Cowboy with James Garner. I love James Garner. Also in 74, he does a TV movie called Strange Homecoming. It's him and Glenn Campbell with Leif Garrett. I told you Leif Garrett would come back. But this one kind of looked interesting, and there's a point I wanted to make about it. So it's called Strange Homecoming. Let me pull it up here. First, I guess I'll read the synopsis. Let's read the synopsis. A small town sheriff is surprised to see his brother show up in town, a man whom he hasn't seen in 20 years, and who has graduated from petty thievery to murder. Dun, dun, dun. Robert Culp, to solve a murder, will have to become a murderer. Anyway, I made that last part up. But here's why I want to talk about it. The poster is kind of neat. It's the NBC world premiere movie, Rich Women. How he hated them. He'd taken their jewels and their lives in Acapulco, Paris, Tokyo. Now he's home, hiding, and his brother's suspicious. Is it time to strike again? Look at that. And I love it because it's, I remember these full page ads. Like whenever there was like these TV movies, it always like, you know, make it sound like it was bigger than it was. Like the world premiere, you know, NBC world premiere movie. And it would take up like a whole page in like the TV guide or like that fake generic version of TV guide that came in the Sunday newspapers. Anyway, it felt nostalgic to me, but that is Strange Homecoming. Robert Culp and Glenn Campbell as brothers. Also in 1974, it does the TV movie A Cry for Help. How is that? Is that not like the most generic Lifetime movie name ever? I bet there's been like no less than 50 movies or TV shows called A Cry for Help. Tori Spelling in A Cry for Help. Lori Loughlin in A Cry for Help. Actually, like every fucking Full House actress, right? Jodie Sweetin in A Cry for Help. Candace Cameron, Cry for Help. All right, I'm pulling up the synopsis. Where is A Cry for Help? Here we go. This is not 74, it's 75. 1975 TV movie. It actually has a cool synopsis. A talk radio host who specializes in abusing and insulting his audience gets a call from a disturbed teenage girl who says she is going to commit suicide. He frantically tries to get his listeners to help find the girl before she makes good on her threat. That actually happened, by the way, to Howard Stern. In the 90s, was a guy on a bridge. I guess it was like the Henry Hudson Bridge. Maybe it was Brooklyn Bridge, but I thought it was Henry Hudson. Anyway, he was on the bridge. He calls in Howard Stern and says he's going to kill himself. And Howard Stern kept him on the line. And sure as shit, the cops got there and people got there and they talked him off. But he spent like 30 minutes with the guy, kept him on the line. And he got a lot of credit for that. But it was kind of mixed for good radio as well. Who else was in this, though? So, of course, it was Robert Culp. Chuck McCann is in it. He's back. He was in Double Exposure, that Columbo episode. Michael Lerner is in this. So Michael Lerner, I mentioned him earlier. He was that character actor who used to come to Videotronics when I worked there in the 90s. Bruce Boxleitner is in this, rather. Let's see, who else? Ralph Manza from Banachek, he's in this. Gordon Jump is in this. He raped Dudley on The Different Strokes. I mean, he didn't rape Dudley. I mean, he tried to rape Dudley, which isn't as bad. Right? Attempted rape isn't as bad as actual rape. That was gross. All right. Now we're in 1975 still. He does Inside Out with Telly Savalas, which I talked about in the Telly Savalas episode. Okay. Cool poster alert. Right? We got a cool poster alert here. It's a dual cool poster alert and weird synopsis alert. Right? So it's got both the cool poster and weird synopsis. It is 1976's Sky Riders. And I just watched this movie. It's available on YouTube. It looked cool. It sounded cool. I watched it. It wasn't great. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. And that takes me back to the theory that I talked about in the last episode, which is I think sometimes these cool posters are cover up the fact that the movie's not so cool. But here's a synopsis. When an industrialist wife and kids are kidnapped by terrorists in Greece, the woman's ex-husband comes to the rescue with a plan involving hang gliders. So that made me, I just thought it was funny with hang glider. I got a plan. Get me some, give me some hang gliders. We'll get this problem solved. Culp plays the current husband. James Coburn plays the ex-husband, which is kind of cool. It just sounded kind of neat. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad either. But something caught my eye, and it got me thinking about these movies. The budget was $350,000. So you've got two pretty big stars in it, right? So you're filming on location in Greece. You got James Coburn. You got Robert Culp. You know, it just kind of makes me think of how neat it must have been for filmmakers in the 70s. Everyone involved, right? Think about it. 350 grand gets you probably 2 to 3 weeks in Greece. You probably turn a small profit. I'm guessing Robert Culp got like 30 to 50 grand for it. You know, probably brought his wife or one of his wives or maybe his fucking girlfriend. I don't know. I just kind of dig it, you know, like, hey, let's just put 350 together. Let's run out to Greece. We'll shoot the picture, you know, and we'll hopefully make a couple bucks on it. Everyone have a good time. And we're not going to take ourselves too seriously. And now it seems like every movie is like $400 million budget with every star they can pack into it in CGI. And it needs to make at least $1 billion or else it's a failure. Or on the other end of the spectrum is the movies cost $32. No one's going to see it. But you do get some Oscar nominations, right? There's nothing in the middle anymore. And, I don't know. I feel like I would have loved the 70s. Just like, you know what? Yeah, fuck it. I'm not busy this month. I'm going to go to Greece for a couple weeks. I'll shoot a picture with James Coburn. I'll put a little cash in my pocket while I'm in Greece. Maybe I'll stay longer if there's something else filming, or maybe I'll shoot over to France, film a quick movie over there, come on home, give the wife the old pickle tickle, and then go somewhere else and make a movie. I don't know. It just seems kind of cool to me. Anyway, back to Robert Culp. So the rest of 76 through 78 is pretty forgettable. But he did play Joshua in a 1978 episode of Greatest Heroes of the Bible. So let's look at this show for a minute. It's come up before. I've mentioned Greatest Heroes of the Bible before. It's not to be confused with The Greatest American Hero, a Robert Culp show, which will come up in part three of Robert Culp. But I just love the show because I feel like they took a bunch of Fanichek people and stuck them in Bible stories that just don't belong there, or just people in general who don't belong there. So let's talk about this show for a second, because I don't think I've ever really gone into the details. So Greatest Heroes of the Bible ran from 78 to 79. It lasted 17 episodes, rather. An anthology of famous events of the Old Testament, right? So now I'm going to just scroll through. Like, I haven't prepared for this. I'm just going to read out people who were featured in these Old Testament Bible shows, right? Peter Mark Richmond, he came up in the last episode. He was the guy who was in Friday the 13th, Part 8. He was the horny teacher. Ron Rifkin, he played Bezalel. I'm not sure who that is. Who else did this? It's going to take me a second, I'm sure. Bear with me. I'm going through. Let me see some famous actors here. Ed Lauder, I mentioned him before. Joseph Campanella, here we go. Joseph Campanella played Pharaoh. Joseph, he's a tough guy actor too. Yeah, I'm Pharaoh. Eve Plum was in an episode. She was Jan Brady. Frank Gorshin was in it. He was the Joker on the 60s TV Batman. Not Joker. I'm sorry. The Riddler. He was the Riddler. Let's take a look here. Ted Cassidy played Goliath. Ted Cassidy famously played Lurch in the Addams Family. And then he was also in Butch Cassidy's Sundance Kid. He was that big fucker that Butch Cassidy had to kick him in the balls. Of course, Robert Culp played Joshua. David Burney played Daniel. Sam Bottoms played Joseph. Victoria Principal played Queen Esther. Another Brady Bunch alum, Barry Williams, Greg Brady. He played Jacob. Don Most played Daniel, not to be accused of Donnie Most. So Donnie Most, of course, who is Don Most? He's changed his name. But he played Ralph Malph on Happy Days. And now he's in a fucking Bible show. William Daniels, famously of Boy Meets World. Who else? I'm sure if I keep going, I'll find people. Ron Palillo. Ron Palillo was Arnold Horshack. And he plays Hevet in some episode of a Bible story. How's Arnold Horshack? Very impressive, Mr. Moses. That's my horrible Horshack impression. June Lockhart, Beverly Garland, ooh. Erin Moran, also from Happy Day, she played Tova. Dean Stockwell is back. He played Hisar. Bernie Koppel from The Love Boat played Potiphar. John Shook, famous character actor, he actually was in the reboot of The Munsters, played Jair. Let's take a look. Tanya Roberts, who she was so hot. She was in, did an episode. There you go. Eddie Mecca from Happy Days. He played Carmine Raguso, the big ragu. He played Yuri. So anyway, it just makes me laugh. Like, this is old school, Old Testament show with like these fucking 70s TV actors. I'd love to get this on DVD and just watch this show. I want to see the fucking big ragu in a Bible thing. He couldn't help himself but dance all the time with fucking Laverne. Now he's doing Bible stuff. But anyway, that is the greats. I wish they'd do some more fan check people. Like, I love Savalas in there. Who loves you, baby? Or who else? George C. Scott would be good. Oh, even Peter Falk. Peter Falk. Just one more thing. Anyway, that is the greatest heroes of the Bible. And it makes me laugh. So now we're in 1979, a very busy year for Mr. Culp. He does three movies, a miniseries, and three TV shows all in one year. Let's have a gander at the highlights, just the highlights, not all of them. The miniseries he did that year was Roots, The Next Generation. The original Roots, of course, was a phenom. I mean, it was a big fucking deal. I didn't even realize there was a second one, so I'm thinking it wasn't as big a hit, but there was Roots, The Next Generation. The movies he did in 79 are pretty forgettable, but I did find maybe a little gem. It's called Golden Girl, and I dug it, not to be confused with the TV show. 1979, it's called Golden Girl. A neo-Nazi doctor tries to make a superwoman of his daughter who has been specially fed, exercised, and conditioned since she was a child in preparation of the Olympics. So it brings back James Coburn, so he's back with Robert Culp again. But the girl, the lead in it is Susan Anton. And I bring this up because models used to be a much bigger deal than they are now. Like, I mean, Raquel Welch, we talked about it earlier. I mean, she was at the time probably the most beautiful woman in the world. They shoved her in as many movies as they could. Same with Susan Anton, famous beauty. They shoved her in a million movies. I don't think you see that enough. Models don't have the same kind of juice. Like, I don't feel like you're going to see Kendall Jenner in a movie or Hailey Bieber or whoever the fuck, you know, I don't know. It's kind of funny. But you know what else was in this movie? Was Michael Lerner, the guy I knew from Videotronics. How about that? So he has come up a lot in the podcast. Maybe we should look him up. I wish I had talked to him when I had the chance. I didn't care. And now he's dead. So alas, back to 1979. Of the TV shows he did this year, one was the short-lived Bob Conrad shitfest, A Man Called Sloan. It lasted 12 episodes. I don't like Bob Conrad. But then Robert Culp does something very special. An episode of Miss Columbo. Yes, Mrs. Columbo. So it was not a hit, sadly, but it's in the Columbo universe. I got to give it some of R-E-S-P-E-C-T. So it went from 79 to 80. It lasted 13 episodes. And there's some weird convoluted shit here. But first, I'll start with a synopsis. So Miss Kate Columbo, wife of the famous lieutenant, solves crimes as a reporter while raising her little daughter. So there you go. I don't think I even realized Columbo had a daughter. I'm sure it's come up before. Kate Mulgrew played Kate Columbo. Most recently, she's really well known. She played the character of Red in Orange is the New Black. So that's kind of how I know her. Sadly, the show was not well received. And I'm going to read you some trivia here and I'll kind of break it down for you because they ended up calling some audibles on this show to kind of change it. The series was originally executed as following the exploits of the crime reporter wife of Lieutenant Columbo. But when the series couldn't capitalize on the popular earlier series, producers changed Miss Columbo's name to Callahan, and soon all references to the fictional cop were removed. So that's kind of interesting, right? So they couldn't get it to work, so they retooled it, kind of taking away the whole Columbo theme. Anyway, so that's that. His specific episode, Robert Culp's, was called Word Games. It aired February 26, 1979, and it was the pilot. How about that? So he was in the pilot. Now, speaking of pilots, as I scrolled through the cast of this episode, I found two actors that jumped out at me, Frederick Forrest and Barney Martin. And both of them were in the pilot of 21 Jump Street. How about that? So Frederick Forrest, famous actor, he was the original captain on 21 Jump Street during season one. And story says, or legend says rather, that that's the reason Johnny Depp agreed to do the show. He was a big fan of Frederick Forrest, wanted to work with him, so he agreed to do it. They dropped Frederick Forrest after season one, or I think he left the show after season one. He was replaced by Stephen Williams, the African-American guy who played Captain Adam Fuller. Now, Barney Martin, who was also in this Robert Culp episode of Miss Columbo with Frederick Forrest and, of course, Robert Culp, he was in the pilot of 21 Jump Street. He played Johnny Depp's partner when Johnny Depp was still a street cop, a uniform cop. He played the veteran cop who was his partner, but Johnny Depp looked too young, didn't get respect, so he was forced to join the Jump Street unit, right? Barney Martin would later appear in another episode of 21 Jump Street as a different character, as this kid's grandfather. But anyway, just made me laugh because here's the pilot of Miss Columbo featuring two actors that were in the pilot of 21 Jump Street, and now we are in 1980, and I'm going to stop, because there's just too much shit to do. So we will wrap up Robert Culp's career in the final episode of Robert Culp, entitled Robert Culp Part 3. I'm very original with my titles. In which case, we'll talk about SNL. We're going to talk about another hit show that he did, more TV guest spots, maybe some Love Boat. And that is the end of this episode. So thank you for listening. I hope you have more of an appreciation for me and Robert Culp and all things me and Robert Culp. It's been a pleasure doing this. I'm looking forward to coming back next week in part 3 of Robert Culp. If you like the podcast, rate it, review it. Hit me up on email, fanacheckpodcast@gmail.com. Of course, as I always say, I'm on Facebook, Real Fanacheck. Hit me up on Twitter, Fanacheck Podcast. I was going to ask you to do something else. Just go ahead and do me a favor. Stay tuned for the next exciting episode of Fanacheck.